CBS World News brings you the news of the world on Tuesday, June 9th. Once again, Columbia's correspondents are ready to report to you direct from across the oceans by shortwave radio. Today, we shall call in Australia, London, and Cairo. But before calling in our first point, here are the highlights of the news this morning. More than 300 British bombers continued their attacks against the German Ruhr during the night. Other RAF planes raided the Nazi-occupied Channel coastal area. In Libya, the British have repulsed another Axis attack. In Russia, heavy fighting is raging before Sevastopol and on the Kalinin front. In the Far East, there is nothing further to report on the Midway battle. And in the Australian area, Allied airmen have scouted Japanese positions on New Guinea Island. And now, Harry Marble.
Before calling in Australia this morning, here are the latest details on the fighting in Russia. The latest Soviet communique reported that a strong German attack has been beaten off by Red Army forces in the Kalinin sector, northwest of Moscow. 520 Nazis were killed in this enemy drive, which was supported by tanks. Large quantities of arms were captured by the Russians. On the southern end of the battlefront in the Crimea, the Germans are said to be suffering heavy casualties in their renewed attack on Sevastopol. Dispatches from that area said the fighting was serious, but every Nazi attack was said to have been repulsed. Now for a report direct from the Southwest Pacific. After a brief pause, we take you to Australia.
CBS Australia, John Raleigh reporting. Total damages and casualties from enemy shellings of Sydney and Newcastle on Sunday night and Monday morning have been compiled. Only a few hundreds of dollars of destruction resulted from Jap shells of medium caliber fired in the dead of night, apparently without the benefit of spotters or flares. Some 20 houses in both cities were damaged by Tokyo's undersea marauders. In no single case was an entire dwelling demolished. A couple were barely hit, but cannot be said to have been completely destroyed. 5 claims so far have been filed with the Australian War Damage Commission. Temporary repairs were authorized and begun yesterday. Most of the homes hit by shells assessed their claims at no more than £5 or slightly more than $15. 2 casualties were recorded, the first being a man who was thrown from his bed when a shell burst uncomfortably nearby. The second was a young woman who sustained minor cuts from flying glass. The man broke his ankle when tumbled out of bed. Authorities are more or less convinced that the shells came from one of Japan's large submarines, which carry, in some cases, guns from medium to heavy caliber. These craft, so far as is known, have a cruising range of something like 16,000 miles. As one Aussie remarked, that's a long way to come to break a man's ankle and inflict a few slight cuts. One school of thought has advanced the theory that the big subs may have housed the brood of little two-man craft which attempted to effect a devastating attack within Sydney Harbour itself and failed miserably. Experts point out that the oversized French submarine Surcouf, now out of action, carried not only an 8-inch gun turret but a hangar aft of the conning tower. It is certainly within the realm of possibility that the Japs have evolved similar craft, substituting heavy guns and hangars for stowage berths for several midget subs. Soon rules with full naval honors were accorded today to the 4 Japanese whose bodies were recovered from the wrecked midget sub so far raised in Sydney Harbor. Today's communique from General MacArthur's headquarters in Melbourne states that over Ley in New Guinea, 2 Zulu-type fighters tried to intercept an Allied reconnaissance and that 1 enemy plane was shot down. The northern front of Australia has been unusually quiet the past few days. Communiques have been brief. Action sparked. But officers promise that there has been no slackening off on our part. Rather, the onus rests with what may be a very upset enemy whose reports on Midway have not boosted glad-eyed morale. This is John Raleigh in Australia, returning to CBS in New York.
Now for a report from the British capital. We take you now to London.
From now I go ahead blind. RAF London. Charles Collingwood reporting. The Royal Air Force bombed Aurora last night. It wasn't a 1,000 bomber raid, but the Air Ministry says that a strong force of bombers were attacking. No specific target is mentioned, so probably the attacks were dispersed over the whole area. It's a long, highly industrialized strip, which after 3 years of war, still remains the heart of the German munitions industry. It's probably the most highly defended area in Europe. And last night, 18 British bombers were shot down. While the RAF main attack was on the Ruhr, other British aircraft of all categories were attacking last night. Some bombers attacked the docks at Dieppe. An aircraft of the Coastal Command shot down a German seaplane in the North Sea. British night fighters and fighter bombers attacked airfields and freight trains and other targets all over occupied territory. The famous Schiphol air drone in Holland, which used to be the commercial airport where we landed for Amsterdam, was bombed by an American-built Boston. The main political event of this week in London will be the great coal debate in the House of Commons. It now appears that the government's plan is assured of an easy passage. Political prophets say that there will be no more than a handful of votes against the government's plan. The Labour Party decided yesterday to accept the official program for the coal industry. The Labourites resolved that while they cannot regard the scheme proposed as a complete solution of the problem, nevertheless, they accept the government's proposals as an advance on the existing situation. Meanwhile, a strike in the coal pits in the north of England has been called off, and the miners are back at work. It's estimated, though, that the strikes, which have been going on for about 3 weeks, have cost the country about 100,000 tons of coal. One of the things which has been holding up coal production is the feeling of the miners that they're not getting enough money. And today a government board is sitting inquiring into the miners' wage plan. The miners are asking for a guaranteed wage of $17 a week, and it looks as though they may get part of the increase which they're demanding. The neutral state of Southern Ireland has provided one of the many political puzzles of this war. Like Great Britain, they have been affected by many a shortage. Many things are running out in Southern Ireland. When I was there about 10 days ago, you could still buy almost everything, even though it was short, without giving up any ration coupons. But from today, clothes will be rationed in Southern Ireland. It will take coupons to buy anything from underwear to overcoats. A citizen of Southern Ireland from today will be able to get fewer clothes than a citizen of belligerent Great Britain. An Irishman will only get 52 coupons a year. But out of those, if he wants a suit, he will have to give up 40 of his 52. In England, a suit only costs 26 coupons. There's no doubt that, neutral or not, the war is coming to Southern Ireland. And now, for the latest news of the fighting in the Libyan desert, we take you to Cairo.
CBS Egypt, Edward Sholian reporting.
The latest news from the Western Desert tells of a full-scale Axis attack on the southern end of the Allied line at Bir Hakeim. The Axis forces included tanks, infantry, artillery, and dive bombers. After fighting, in which the Royal Air Force actively assisted the land forces by effectively attacking enemy concentrations, the attack was repulsed. It was learned today that supplies and reinforcements are reaching the Bir Hakeim defenders, despite the enemy's efforts to isolate them. Meanwhile, west of the scene of action, British columns are effectively intercepting Axis supply columns and destroying them. The latest report states that a British column west of the Kerdron district inflicted damage on the enemy and also took a number of prisoners, Italians. An officer who has just returned from the battlefront says that a British artillery battery stationed west of the minefield gap surprised a concentration of about 1,000 enemy vehicles and broke it up in confusion, inflicting severe damage and casualties. Today's communiques state that in the Knightsbridge area, there was only little activity, but bomber aircraft successfully raided enemy motor vehicles and tanks in this region. Other Air Force activities were the bombing of shipping in the harbor of Cagliari in Sardinia last Sunday night, and the aerodrome at Heraklion, Crete, last night. At Heraklion, the bombing was most effective, explosions being observed on the runways and among barrack buildings. The fires which broke out were visible 70 miles away. 9 British aircraft are missing from these and other operations. An amusing story of a fox and hound hunt in the battle area of the Western Desert has just come to light. It's a tale about a German Sturmgeschütz, or storm gun,
which will not strangle against anything or anyone ever again. That is, of course, unless against the Germans themselves.
The Sternengeschütz is a 75-millimeter weapon mounted on a truck. It was part of an Axis force which included two armored troop carriers and a staff car caught early one morning moving in the desert by a British patrol. Then followed an exciting game of fox and hound round and about the desert with the enemy vainly trying to escape back to his own position. But the British patrol knew all the tricks. And by lunchtime, all the enemy's vehicles, with the exception of the storm gun, had been captured with their crews. On the armored infantry front,
the British who had been taken prisoner were rescued.
But the storm gun proved a fox with an angry snarl and a nasty bite. All afternoon, the hunt went on, with the advantage of firepower and range with the self-propelled gun, which, however, being fired on the truck platform, could only fire in one direction, so that the crew had to maneuver their vehicle each time before shooting. The armored cars, on the other hand, had the advantage when it came to maneuvering. With their gasoline running low, the crew of the gun eventually made a dash to the southeast and attempted to get gas from an abandoned vehicle. They soon came under fire from British armored cars and had to abandon the attempt. Soon afterwards, the Germans made another attempt to escape, this time to the southwest, but again they were hedged back by the British. For the rest of the afternoon, the gun kept firing, trying to knock out the armored cars with its big shells, while the armored cars would dash in, worry the Germans with fire, and then dash away again. Eventually, this worrying got on the Germans' nerves. At tea time, unable to stand it any longer, they surrendered. This is Edward Shorten in Cairo, returning you to CBS, New York.
A wounded American naval flyer has just given the first eyewitness account of the naval and air battle in the mid-Pacific. Ensign G.H. Gay was shot down and floated for 24 hours in the midst of the battle. He told of watching a line of burning Japanese ships pass by and of highly successful American dive bomber and torpedo plane attacks on Japanese aircraft carriers. Gay saw his comrades attack two Kaga-class carriers, Japan's largest, and a smaller one, and he saw them burst into flame from direct hits. He said that one of the largest carriers was certainly lost and that the others were probably lost. He also saw Japanese planes circle helplessly above their burning carriers. Gay finally was rescued by a naval patrol plane. Admiral Nimitz had high praise for the young ensign, said the admiral, there will be plenty more stories like Gay's. Gay's plane was shot down by a Jap Zero fighter after he had released a torpedo into one big carrier. His machine gunner was hit and Gay was shot in the left leg and lightly in the arm. Here at home today, congressional leaders suggest that President Roosevelt may not order nationwide gasoline rationing. However, they concede that some form of drastic curtailment of non-essential motoring is inevitable. The president is now conducting a survey into the situation, and he promises to release the facts and figures to the nation when they are known. In addition to gasoline and rubber, War Production Board officials have disclosed the possibility that coffee, tea, cocoa, soap, and even clothing may be rationed in the future. It appears this morning as though the June pay of enlisted men in the armed services will be based on $50 per month. Both the House and Senate now agree on that figure. And that's...